Okay, world, it's your girl Malika X, and I am back with another episode of Being Frank, the podcast, where you can be bold, honest, and unmistakable. This week, we will be doing a special show, so stay tuned, keep listening, and if you have questions, as always, I always have to say this, legit questions. Remember, you can send those over to social@beingfrankmedia.com. Again, that's social@beingfrankmedia.com. Let's kick off the show. I got something special for y'all this week. So we are coming back this week to finish up the series of Be The One. I want to wrap up the series the same way that I did with the L word, which I should probably have called it the black L word. But as I'm learning, things are growing and shaping the way that I'm going to do the podcast. And that goes with me closing out each series or me being your girl on the ones and twos every week. I'm still playing with that. I'm not sure what I'm going to bring to y'all next week. But this week, you have me all to yourself again. As I said, I'm here to wrap up the series, Be The One. I cannot believe last week was my 10th episode. It's just crazy. This started from something very, very small, an idea. One day I couldn't sleep and I stayed up all night thinking about doing this, wrote some notes down, and boom, I'm at over 100 unique listeners and I'm working on my 11th episode. Got 10 episodes out there that people are actually listening to, which every week, I cannot believe that. I'm still kind of just surprised that you guys tune in, but thank you for doing that. Like I said, I'm always try to be here for you, and when I can't be, I just know that I'm working behind the scenes, trying to make it happen, but you know, it has to be a dire emergency or something going down if I can't make this shit happen, because you know, this is my passion. And I just find great joy in coming to you to have these different discussions each week. And this is no different. Wrapping up this series, which is near and dear to my heart, I wanted to explain to my people, my listeners, why I decided the title Be The One. So I'm going to go over that. I'm also going to kind of merge a few things like I did last time with some Q&A. I thought that was real cute. People actually like that. So I'm going to keep going with that. Some Q&A during the podcast throughout versus having it like at the end. And then I'm going to answer the questions that I've done with my past guests and finish the statement. Be The One. So I'm going to get into it. I'm not going to hold you any longer than I need to. Last week's show, best friends always, let me just say this, they always get on here and talk too much. I try to keep it short, but with each of my best friends, if you didn't pick up, I have a female best friend, which was Alicia, and she ended the series with the black L word. And then I had my male best friend, Walt, on it, ending the series for Be The One. Just giving you some, you know, some similarities, but some differences in bringing you into my world. But with each of those shows, each time I ran over my mark, which I set for myself. Nobody is saying it can't be 45 minutes long or an hour long even. But I just try to give you really dope content, you know, in a short amount of time to keep you, you know, to keep your attention span, to keep you wanting more, and not to keep you long. You know, I'm just saying, I listen to certain podcasts and I'm like turning it off because it's just too long. So I don't want to be one of those people. But when I had the best friends on the show, what can I say? We just be talking and we get sidetracked, and child, somebody had to reel me in because I'm supposed to be, you know, paying attention to all of that. And it's hard to do it when you got your best friend on the show. Y'all just get to talking, and that's just how it happened. And so last week was like my longest show yet. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I know we had some technical difficulties. I'm trying to work that out. You know, some of my friends just don't want to buy an iPhone. I get it. You know, they're, you know, maybe of a certain quality and brand that you're just not used to. Sorry, Android users, but you got to come over to the dark side, I guess you want to say, with the iPhones, and join the club, especially if you're trying to come on the show. Because each time I have an Android user, sorry, y'all, I have technical difficulties. I don't know. But I'm not going to shade my friends any further, and especially my listeners who are out there listening to me now using an Android device. I appreciate you. Continue to listen. But you know how it is with y'all phones. I'm just saying. My friend Randall had a phone for maybe 2 months, a brand new phone. And it's like the battery thing, like where you charge it, stop work. I don't understand how that could even happen. I don't know. But it would never happen on the iPhone is what I do know. So getting into the show for this week, while I'm sidetracked and talking about iPhones and shading my Android users, as I always do and always will, I just want to go into a little bit of storytelling to talk about how I came up with the title for this series. I usually do a background piece where I have my guests talk about how we met and just give some background for what they do, how we met, just, you know, introducing themselves. But I'm going to introduce you to something you may not know about me. This series of Be the One is talking about survival stories. And I spoke a little bit to being a survivor, but I want to give you the background on me and my experience with cancer. And that's a word that we are, it's still hard for me to say. And I feel like we are still, and I say we, I mean my community, my friends, my family, we are still having a hard time saying to me. And I think one thing that I want to message and saying this, and for all of those that are out there listening or maybe have somebody that has survived cancer in their family or close circle, or maybe even is somebody that you see in the workplace, just so that we can be comfortable saying that word. Because I know just saying it just now is like one of those words that you are afraid to say. So being the one has everything to do with being the one to survive, and not just anything. Be the one who survives cancer is like, oh my God, it is in every sense of one word, the only word that I could come up with is a miracle. The statement came to me. Before I get into the statement, let me just go back and slow down a little bit. In 2014, at 35, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, which abbreviated is AML. Leukemia is a blood cancer, a type of cancer that is often associated with young people, like children. You see, you know, in commercials. That was my only understanding of it. When I first heard the word leukemia, that's what my mind went directly to. And AML is not a cancer of what they would consider me as a young adult. Sometimes you see it, leukemia in children, and then other times you see it in older people, our elders, our seniors, but not often in young adults, and not just young adults, young, healthy adults. So I was hit with that news at 35 years old, in the middle of what I felt like was the height of, you know, just my life and living, and had no signs of being sick or any past history. So it really came as a surprise. and something that I don't feel like I prepared for. But what I didn't realize is that God was always preparing me for this. So not only did I survive cancer, but I want to talk about being the one who survived other things so that I could survive cancer. So we understand that along our journey, God sends us through certain tests for a reason, to prepare us for other things. And I think that's why I was the one to survive. The statement, be the one, and I have to go back to my time after I was treated. I went through a really strong dose of chemotherapy. I was quarantined to a hospital for a month at a time where I couldn't leave the floor, being treated with chemotherapy every day for a 7-day period straight. And like my immune system totally wiped out. So it was some really harsh stuff. It was to kill everything, even the good stuff. So I couldn't be around people without having a mask on or them having a mask or being completely covered in the hospital gowns and things like that when I get visitors. So I came from like really a new birth, like a rebirth. That's what they call it, actually. So I went through the chemo first time, went into remission, and I was told, boom, not only do you need to do this chemo, you're in remission, but the cancer is going to come back if you don't have a transplant. So not only was I the one to, you know, survive that round of chemotherapy that can kill the average man if, you know, you aren't under doctor's care and you're not getting fluids and blood or platelets and all of these other things that just the average man doesn't have to deal with on a daily basis to even think about, your potassium levels being too high or too low that you could die, or your platelets being too low that, you know, you can bleed out because your blood won't clot. I mean, I went through all of those things during just the chemotherapy for the treatment. And then I had to have a transplant. Long story short, my brother, one of my brothers, he is the one that saved me. One of four. It's one of these things that I start seeing connections with God. Just was like the one. There's always one, you know, it's always one, it's always a chance. And that was one of the things that I really stuck to and didn't give up on during this whole time. And kind of the message I'm coming with this, you know, during this series, it's always one of us that survives. But he was the one of four that he wasn't a perfect match, but he was a good enough match. And we were able to go and do a transplant, and not just any kind of transplant. Most people thought I was like getting an organ donated. I got a whole new immune system from my brother's stem cells. And that's the science behind that. I would say, look to my website, and I posted videos about my time going through that whole process and the transplant, and my brother donated his stem cells. It's so much to just know about the science behind that. I just say, if that is something that you are feeling, you know, like it touched your spirit and like you want to know more, I would say get out there, read about it, look at the Leukemia Lymphoma Society's website. Today, which would really today when you hear this, is National Survivors Day, is another reason I wanted to bring this to you. I should have started with that maybe first. Just knowing that every first Sunday in June, if you didn't know, it is National Survivors Day. And so not only that, just knowing that there are many types of survivors, and I know we always think of cancer as being the thing that you survive. But along the way, there were many things that I had to survive in order to beat cancer. And my brother saved my life, long story short, with his stem cells. And I've been in remission for 4 years, thank God. I still am in and out of the hospitals because I have a compromised immune system. It's really cool, the science behind things, but at the same time, there was the great risk of my body just rejecting the stem cells and shutting down on me. So there was fights that I had to have that people just don't know about as a cancer survivor. But that part, I feel like, is one of those things that, you know, I live with, and my caretakers, you know, and the people that were around me, thank God for just love and, you know, the outpouring of support, because I would not have been able to get through that part of my life without them. And thank God for my experiences prior to that, that strengthened me over time so that I could be prepared to go through that kind of a battle, because like I said, God was preparing me for that along the way. Like, so that is like one of the biggest things, you know, me being a survivor of cancer. But I wouldn't have been able to survive that had I not been born into a certain, you know, family, been born on a certain street, went to a certain school, had a certain set of friends. I mean, all of these things I've learned over time prepared me for that very moment. The piece that I want to get into next, that's my first thing, you know, that I survived. And I gave you some background on Be The One, but I didn't tell you about after I went through remission and, you know, I was done with treatment. A part of me just felt like I needed to give back. I needed to do more. God gave me more time to do more. So I'm always like feeling guilty about that. And I've asked, I feel like I've asked a guest or two. We talked about survivor's guilt and different things. That is my guilt. Like, I have more time when others didn't. So God gave me more time. So I feel like every minute of every day, I should be doing something to give back, to be of service to someone. That's a piece of why I do this. So a part of me giving back was going up on the unit of the hospital and going to talk to patients. When I told my nurses, because I stayed on the floor for 3 months. I was on that floor off and on, going through treatment, then going through transplant, and then post-transplant complications. I spent probably almost 90 days in the hospital. And I just remember days where, you know, people didn't come to visit, being alone, being afraid, not knowing. And I didn't want that for anybody. So I told the nurses, if there was anyone at any point going through what I had to go through, I didn't want that for them. And I told them that they could call me. And if the patients were up for it, I would come sit with them. And I was called a couple different times. But there was one time I sat with the patient, and she had, I believe she had relapsed. Her cancer came back. And I was sitting with her, and I came in the room, and this wasn't the first patient I had sat with, but it's a thing when they see someone like them who's been in the place that they've been in, because there's nothing like seeing someone that survived what you've been through. And so they know that you know what it's like to have the chemo pumping through you, to have the steroids blowing you up where you look unidentifiable to family and friends, or losing the weight and looking looking in the mirror or looking away from the mirror because you don't want to see yourself as a skeleton. They know you've been through all of that. So when they see me walk in, it's almost like I don't even feel like I am me anymore. I'd never felt like that. Like it was like an out of body experience. Like I was taken over by something greater than I am. And they saw something in me that I had nothing to do with. It was God's work. And they looked at me with through their eyes. I could see that they looked at me as hope. I was hope for them. I was the one. I sat with her and we talked about my experiences, my similarities, our similarities, I should say, our treatments, our ups and downs, our, you know, other things, hospital food, which nurses know how to, you know, draw blood, which ones don't. You know, we just talked about all of those things, you know, it being so cold in the hospital, needing a warm blanket, just stuff. And before I left, and I won't say her name just for the privacy of her family and her peace, we, you know, grabbed hands and talked, prayed, blah, blah, blah. And she told me, be the one. That's where I got it from. She told me to be the one. And so in her honor, I have to continue that message, which may seem like a burden, but just to be able to tell whomever is listening out there going through whatever they're going through, be the one that survives. And I will never forget that. And may she rest in peace. She's no longer with us. But I felt that as I left the room. I really felt that, like, I would be the one. I would be the one. I would be the voice. I would be the one, the voice for the voiceless. I was the chosen one. I mean, not the chosen one in the sense of, you know, some divine spirit or anything like that. But at that moment, I realized my life was chosen. To even step into the rooms with different patients, I was chosen to do that. I was chosen to go back to work and have life after cancer. I was chosen to be in relationships and have friendships and partners after cancer. I was the one. I was supposed to be the one to be able to have a life after cancer. God gave me more time. So that's where Be the One came from. It just has so much meaning to me. Not just as a cancer survivor, but there were so many things that led to that experience. Like I said, growing up, I'm from Cleveland. I told y'all that. I know this is one of those podcasts. This one, I don't know where it was going, what direction. But I'm just really speaking from the heart and just telling my story, because I feel like I need to be the one to talk about survivors and their life after cancer, and not just life after cancer, but life after, when you have more time, when God gives you more time, every time you wake up, how are you using that? After each test, whether it's in school or, you know, on the job or whatever, how are you using what you learn? Be the one to use what you learn. And I mean, you learn things every day through your experiences. It doesn't have to be cancer. Let us pray that it's not that, but I want to be the one. I want to be the one to tell you there's life after cancer. I want to show you through my experience that there's life after cancer. Going back to, you know, being a product of my environment and how Cleveland and everyone's giving me shit right now. Thank you, J.R. Smith, for that terrible decision you made at the end of game one in the finals the other night. I have to hear about it from all my friends. People know that I'm rooting for my home team. But we've always been the mistake by the lake. If you know anything about Cleveland, or if you're from Cleveland, we've always been the people that have gotten, you know, laughed at, made fun of, shitted on, whether it's they make movies about us or there's some joke in a TV series about going to Cleveland or nothing being in Cleveland. You know, these days we got LeBron. At least we got LeBron. That's what I say. But Cleveland is the city that I come from, no pun intended, but Bone Thugs and Harmony come from Cleveland, you know. That came from their song, if you didn't catch it. Just my Bone Thug fans out there, you know, Cali fans. I know y'all still fucking with Bone Thugs the hard way. But that place is what made me, what brought me up and presented me as this woman to the world, the rest of the world. I was presented by Cleveland. Like, that's what birthed me, you know. That's what shaped me and molded me, that the grit and grime of the city life in Cleveland. And it wasn't always fun. But I feel like I have a responsibility to uphold the reputation of Cleveland. Like, I have, you know, being Black, you have a Black tax, right? We all know about the Black tax. But when you from Cleveland and you Black and you a woman and you gay, queer, what? How many different taxes is that? God damn, like, it ain't even fair no more. But I'm gonna be the one to survive all of that shit and uphold a certain class and reputation that defies all the odds to show the world there is life after Cleveland. Even I have to show my family, my friends, the people that I left there, that there is more to Cleveland than being on the porch, on the front porch, watching, you know, such and such ride down the street, or, you know, whatever you doing in Cleveland, or standing on the block, whatever it is known for, or just the grind and the hustle of everyday life of Cleveland. I have to show them that there's more to life than just that. Then I have this other foot in this other world where I have to show the world that Cleveland gives birth to people like me, Jules, people of value, of substance, people that you want on your team, that bring something to the table. All right? I feel like I have to play both sides of that and be the one not only to survive those mean, grimy streets of Cleveland, to say, you know, there's more to life than just that, but then I have to survive this different class of people that, you know, I wasn't raised around, and show them that, you know, even though that's what created me, what gave birth to me, what molded me and shaped me, I can still survive in the private sector or in corporate America or in a fine dining fucking restaurant. I know how to use the utensils that are in front of me when it's not just a fork and a plate. You know, I can survive eating at a nice 5-star restaurant. It's just so many things that have come along the way that I feel like that if I deal with and have to survive and be the one to show the world that you can have a foot in both of those worlds and still come out okay. Not to say that you won't have some anxiety, you won't have some guilt, but I can't play victim. That's one thing I don't want anyone that's surviving anything to do, because you just suffer, right? You don't get to live. You don't get to live. And if you're getting more time, and every day I feel like each one of us wake up with more time, you're supposed to live. God gave you more time. So live. The other thing I have to say is, you know, it's one thing about my environment, and I ain't gonna go into it too much because everybody struggle. Everybody. And my struggle is, I'm not gonna say harder, harsher than anybody's struggle. It was difficult growing up in the early 80s. I'm a 70s baby. That's a jewel in itself, because you know, ain't these kids now, these millennials, it ain't too many of us out here that's being able to speak this language that I could speak. Growing up in the 80s, crack hitting, Reaganomics, it fucked our family up. And I know there are a lot of other people like that. There were working class people around me and in my neighborhoods doing well. You know, we weren't rich, but we never wanted for shit. I don't feel like I wanted for shit growing up. I was a happy kid, but shit got real different when the crack era hit. There was great things about the 80s that I can remember, me having some fresh British Nikes and being on the back of my brother's mongoose bike on the pegs and getting rode around, you know, the hood, like little childhood memories that were great. But then there were some things that I don't ever want to have to remember ever. Like I said, my struggle was no different, or I ain't gonna say it was worse than other people who grew up in that environment, but I definitely saw shit that I don't wish on no one, and especially not a kid. And then we had to go through the 90s, you know, where everybody going to jail and, you know, people lost out here. I'm trying to graduate high school. I'm trying to be the one to graduate high school out of my mother's 5 kids. How about that? That's what I'm working on that amidst everything else. And I did it. I survived high school on the northeast side of Cleveland in one of the toughest neighborhoods that you can come to in Cleveland, on St. Clair at Glenville High School. If you know anything about nowadays, it's a football machine and producing great athletes like Ted Ginn Jr. and, you know, several other people that have gone on to Ohio State and made great names for themselves. But when I went to Glenville, that shit wasn't like that. It was like drug dealers, and I mean, they weren't dealing drugs in school. They was cutting school and going on the block and selling drugs instead of coming to school. And they had fancier cars and coming through and picking girls up. And like, that was the life. I mean, girls peaked at high school. I know some chicks now that I used to think were the shit in high school. You look back and I'm like, well, damn, I'm glad I was kind of lightweight and nerd and not really got too involved in, you know, I ain't gonna lie, I was involved in the streets, but I had my one foot always in the streets and one foot in them books and in the school, because something in me always said that's what was gonna save my life. That's how I was going to survive, is through my education. So I survived high school. I was the one of 5 to graduate out of my mother's kids' high school. And then that was like a really turbulent time. All kinds of shit happening in my family dynamics, moving, leaving one side of town, downsizing. We had to downsize. We lost our house. It was just a tough time. But surviving that, to say, not only am I going to, you know, finish high school, I'm going to go to college. Not just any college. I'm going to go to one of the most prestigious colleges in the Midwest. And I'm going to go there, even though it's predominantly white. And I'm going to make sure that I make it. I said a quote earlier. I met a professor my freshman year, Brian D. Samuel. He always told me, be the one. You know, he didn't say it, be the one like that, but just make sure you ain't the one that don't make it. You know, that stuck with me. It resonated with me. He was so real when he said that. I just could, like, I had a fear of not making it, not being the one to make it. And that's what drove me to finish school. That's, you know, when my friends, you know, assumed that I was getting too high to get good grades. Because, you know, I had my time where I smoked a little weed in college. Who didn't? But, you know, they thought I was like really fucking up in school and wasn't taking school seriously, when it was just the opposite. I did not want to, again, let them people down back home. And I didn't want to show the people that I was now in this selected group that was chosen to be at this fine institution, and I was representing all of that was black. I felt like in classes and social groups and circles, and you know, I couldn't not do well. It was that black tax again. I had to double down and make sure I was doing right. I made sure I survived. I survived college. I not only survived undergraduate, I decided to go back and get my graduate degree. And just like, who would think a girl from the east side of Cleveland with a very, I won't even say mediocre high school education, because Glenville wasn't teaching us shit. It was a few teachers in there that cared, and it was one that's near and dear to my heart. Mr. Mandel, I don't know if you're still out there, but he looked out for me. He kept me focused and telling me that, you know, this is how you're going to get out of all of this. Anybody who had Mr. Mandel out there know Mr. Mandel had a way of getting to us, white guy, but he had a way of speaking to us in that community and connecting with us, where he didn't even have behavior problems in his class. I used to see motherfuckers get knocked out at school, teachers get knocked out at school. I mean, it just was a different atmosphere. And then I go to this college where kids get new cars as freshmen, and other kids riding around in BMWs, and they living in these nice houses, and they got all of these matching linens, and I got mismatched sheets. I got one color, the fitted sheet, one color, the other sheet, the other color. I got some comforter from Value City. I'm coming with nothing. And I still survived that shit. I still survived that shit because it didn't matter. It was what was in me that mattered, and everything that I brought with me from that experience coming from the east side of Cleveland. That's what I know now. That's what I know now. I didn't know that before. And I think the last piece, I'm going to claim it, and I'm going to say I survived generational poverty. I am blessed and fortunate. Not only is today National Survivors Day, but I have that to celebrate. And all this weekend, all this month is Pride Month. You know, me and my girl, we just closed on a house on Friday. And I just feel like that is one of those American dream type things, although it's supposed to be afforded to everyone, that whole getting your house and being able to move into a certain tax bracket and afford to be able to have a home in a decent neighborhood and all of that. That's just really a dream for most of us. And so I am claiming, although if you know anything about generational poverty, it takes more than one generation to say you've made it and survived. You have to have multiple generations. And I say that it stops with me. I'm breaking a cycle for my family. And I hope there's someone else out there that can say, I'm going to break the cycle for my family. I'm going to be the one who break the cycle. and we will no longer be a generation where we are codependent or we are not doing things. We're not movers and shakers because, I mean, our ancestors already paid for, as Oprah say, paid for our crown. We stand on the shoulders of greatness. Like, why can't we? If I had nothing coming up, and I'm able to do all of this, if I'm able to survive anyway, in spite of, that's grit. That's resilience. That's strength. That's within each and every one of us. You can't buy that. That doesn't come prepackaged. That can't be taught to anyone. That's what God implanted in us. Have you tapped into that? That is the part that I want people to understand too, of just really living, being able to live fully, you know, and not my people at home, my people that I am, this other foot in this other world. There's a book Brian gave me called A Foot in Each World when I was a freshman, and he wanted me to read that book for a reason. If you haven't read that book, Leonetta McLean, Black woman, one of the first writers for the Chicago Tribune. Unfortunately, she committed suicide because she could not take the struggle between the two worlds. And I realized I have kind of really maneuvered through this thing, not just with the stress that comes with the balancing act of my home, where I'm from, and being true to that, to where I am now and what I'm doing, and honoring and saying I deserve that. But then I'm a woman, I'm Black, I'm queer. It's so many other things that can prevent me from living fully or get in the way of me living fully, because it can only prevent me if I allow it. So I got to figure out what matters and what's most important in my life and stop going from victim and really looking at it as a survivor of things. I'm not a victim of cancer. I survive cancer. I'm not a victim of, you know, poverty. I survive poverty. I'm not a victim of poor education. I survived that shit. And in spite of all of that, I'm here doing what I'm doing right now to this day and giving y'all dope content anyway. How about that? So I want to leave y'all with one thing before I cut. I feel like I've been talking a lot. I don't know. So I'm going to just end it with me finishing the statement that I've asked all of my guests in this series. And the statement, I've thought about it. You know where it comes from, the story behind it. But I just want to tell people also to be the one to discover your purpose. Okay, so my message is be the one to discover your purpose. Know what your passion is. Go after it. If you do that, you can't lose. You'll find happiness in everything you do. It doesn't have to be, you know, something crazy, outlandish. It could be something simple, but if that's what you're passionate about, go after it, explore it, try it, do it, and you'll find that that's where you discover your joy and your happiness. A lot of people always running around caping, talking about how woke they are, but ask them if they know what their purpose is. What do people say? Can you answer that question? What's your purpose? So I just feel like you have to be the one to discover your purpose. Know your purpose. You ain't woke if you don't know what your purpose is, if you're not passionate about what you're doing, you actually out here sleepwalking. There is a quote that I have written down, and it's by the most unlikeliest person that you probably is going to be like, Malika be on some shit. But this quote is from DMX. I know, y'all gonna laugh, whatever. X has some real fire music. This is to my set late 70s babies, early 80s, because I don't really fuck with all of them 80s babies, because you know that crack era was really hard on our 80s babies. Not all of them. Mm-mm. We can't sit down and have a conversation with all them 80s babies. But if you know about DMX, you know he had fire music and the early 2000s. But he had this one track called Slippin'. If you know the Slippin', I'm falling, I can't get up. Get me back on my feet so I can tear shit up. I feel like that's not the quote, but I just had to sing the song so you know what song I'm talking about. Like, you don't know the song. But if you don't know the song, listen to the song. X was fire. DMX was fire back then. But I just feel like that's a part of our survival tale. If you slip, you fall, get back up, get so you could tear shit up. But in the song, he says, and I quote, "To live is to suffer. But to survive, well, that's to find meaning in the suffering." That was DMX. Said that profound ass statement. I say it one more time. To live is to suffer, but to survive, well, that's to find meaning in the suffering. So I'm going to tell y'all, thank you for joining me. Discover your purpose. Find out what you're passionate about. That's where you discover your happiness. And that is really living. That's the epitome of surviving. Don't just be out here sleepwalking, suffering, but survive that shit. Find meaning in the suffering. There's a lot of things I go through. I suffered, but that ain't gonna be my excuse. I ain't gonna let that be my excuse for why I can't find my happiness, why I can't find my joy. And I'm going to just sit here and be an example. I'm going to be the one. So I'm going to leave y'all with that. Until next time. Peace. That's our show for this week. Hopefully someone walked away with something meaningful and a better understanding of the topics we discussed. Remember, I'm going to keep grinding and keep hustling to give you this dope content. If you have questions, remember, legit questions, you can always send those in to social@beingfrankmedia.com. Again, that's social, S-O-C-I-A-L, at Being Frank Media. You can now find this podcast on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, and Public Radio, y'all. Your girl doing her thing. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Being Frank Media, where you can be bold, honest, and unmistakable. Peace.